I call Senate Resources to order. Today is March 27th, 2015. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:31 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Michiki, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe Senator Wielichowski will be joining us shortly. Excused today is Senator Stedman and Senator Stoltz. I want to welcome House Speaker Representative Chenault in the audience, as well as Representative Hawker and Senate President Meyer. So welcome. Helping us today, Recording Secretary, is Ann. We've got Jonathan working the audio for us, and Ike is the committee aide. Today we will take up, once again, Senate Bill 8. It was first heard on March 20th. Then we'll take up House Bill 132, first heard on March 25th. And finally, if there's time, we'll go to Senate Bill 57, first heard on March 18th. So to start things out, we will start with Senate Bill 8. We opened public testimony at the last hearing on this bill, and we had the bill introduced and so forth, so we are at public testimony. I left it open at our last meeting. I see that there is one person signed on in Homer who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 8. So if we could put Mr. Dennis Wade through. Mr. Wade, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, if you'd speak up just a bit louder. Try it again.
Yes, it's Dennis Wade. I'm from Homer.
Wonderful.
And I support Senate Bill 8, the bill for industrial hemp production licensing. Hemp is a very versatile crop, and it's being grown worldwide. Hemp seed was once rated as China's number three most valuable seed crop. Hemp seed was the leading producer of lighting oil in the year 2,000 years ago. I hear hemp seed oil burns quite well in modern diesel engines. The stocks make paper pulp. 1 acre of hemp will produce as much paper as 4 1/4 acres of timber pulp and easier to refine. The fiber makes strong rope and cloth, canvas, which is a bastardization of the word cannabis, also hemp. Alaskan agriculture will benefit immensely from the establishment of a viable hemp industry. We have to diversify our economy now. Hemp production is a tremendous way to intensify agricultural production for fuel, food, fiber, and paper products. I hope this will go through as soon as possible. If it is passed, I'd like to address the licensing portion. These licenses that are awarded for that, I believe, should be very slight in that the Alaskan agriculturalist is going to have to find seed that will work in our various agricultural areas. It's grown circumpolar, but just getting a seed that will work in Homer isn't going to be the same seed that works in Delta Junction or Fairbanks. And so the first few years, it's going to be hard to find and breed hemp that will grow in our regions. So don't burden the person that's trying to do that with high licensing fees.
Thank
you all for your time and consideration. Do you have any questions?
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Wade. Any questions for Mr. Wade from committee members? Seeing none, another person has signed on. Before I recognize Jan Flora, who is also in Homer, let me remind folks testifying that the time limit is 2 minutes. Please identify your name and any affiliation. So, Jan Flora, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, very well, thank you. Please proceed with your testimony.
My name is Jan Flora. I live outside of Homer, Alaska. I live on a territorial beef cattle ranch that my partner owns and operates. And when we saw industrial hemp in the latest farm bill, the possibilities really excited us. We burn a lot of diesel, putting up 150 to 200 acres of hay for our beef cattle every year. And if we could get hemp to produce seed and buy a cheap oil press, we could burn biodiesel instead of burning diesel and lighten our pretty considerable carbon footprint in our farming operation. The little bit of research I've done, I found they grow hemp on the Kolyma River in Siberia at 65 degrees north latitude. I think Delta Junction's at 63 or 64, right in there. That puts this crop as a real possibility in that area, and they need a smother crop. They've got bad weeds up there. But I want to grow some on our farm. And the stipulation in the Farm Bill says that it's got to be research. And we have a long and storied and very amenable history with working with the professors at UAF and the researchers. We could work with Pat Holloway in Ag Hort up there, or work with Cooperative Extension Ag Hort agent and have a liaison with the university to do some trials with this crop. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Thank you very much, Ms. Flora, for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Flora? Seeing none, thank you. There's no one else online signed up to testify. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 8? Seeing no one, I close public testimony. So that brings us back to the bill. Mr. Mosher, would you like to make any closing remarks?
Madam Chair, for the record, Matt Moser, staff to Senator Ellis, just to thank the committee for their time and consideration on this issue. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Any discussion of the bill from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Costello, a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 8, Work Order 29-LS0195-alpha from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, Senate Bill 8 will move from this committee. We will take a brief at ease to sign the transmittal document, but before I take the at ease, I want to recognize that Senator Wadakowski joined us several minutes ago, so welcome. I bring the Senate Resources Committee back to order. Next line of business is House Bill 132. We heard this previously this week. We have the bill's sponsor here in the room as well as staff. We also have Deputy Commissioner Marty Rutherford from the Department of Natural Resources on line. And someone who put us on hold. I'm wondering, is there anyone from the administration other than Deputy Commissioner here in the room? All right, not seeing no one. Thank you. So we've heard the bill. I did close public testimony at the last hearing. We have, however, left public testimony in writing open and encouraged written comment. We have had one letter of support, which is currently on basis right now, so that can be viewed by committee members and the public. So discussion from members of the committee. Any questions? Ms. Rutherford, Deputy Commissioner Rutherford is online if there are any questions. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the last meeting, I had suggested that we hear from the administration and from the producers, and I'm glad to hear that Ms. Rutherford is on the line. And I'd just like to hear your take on the bill, whether or not you think this helps us, hurts us, sends a good message, a bad message to the markets and to our partners.
Madam Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, would you like me to respond?
Thank you.
Giesel?
Yes, Deputy Commissioner, if you would respond. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Marty Rutherford. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. I'm also the administration's lead on AKLNG project. I think one of the things that I want to do before I get started is to reiterate that the governor has told me that his priority is the AKLNG project, and he's told me to make this work if it's all possible. And that is, we're working very hard to accomplish just exactly that. If I might, Senator, Madam Chair, I would like to reiterate the essence and some of the material that is enclosed in the bill, the letter that was sent to you by Governor Walker earlier today. May I do so?
Yes, Deputy Commissioner. So members of the committee all have copies of the letter. I believe some of them are also available out on the table for the folks here in the audience. So yes, Deputy Commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The governor is saying that he clearly and his administration are focusing on and intending for the AKLNG project to succeed. He also is very clear to recognize and is appreciative of the work that the legislature did on SB 138 because it created both a structure and a process that greatly increases the chance to reach a successful project. He also notes, however, that as some of us are working on this process, it does not absolutely guarantee a project, and I think everyone recognizes that. And that is why he proposes continuing the process of making the Alaska Standalone Pipeline an economically viable backup to the AKLNG project work. It is his intention that we, working on AKLNG, continue to diligently negotiate and work with the producers on the AKLNG project. For the ASAP expanded project, he's proposing that the state evaluate increasing the project's gas throughput to make it an economically viable backup. The AGDC board recently passed a resolution that directed the corporation to develop a cost estimate and a schedule for a 36-inch diameter pipe at two different strengths, 600 and 900, I believe, and that this was in keeping with the 2013 AGDC project plan amendment that increased the pipe size from 24-inch to 36 inches. He also clearly states in his letter that it's his plan that the state continue discussions with Asian LNG buyers to preliminarily explore their interest in a backup ASAP pipeline should AKLNG fail to come to fruition. He has specific reasons for his belief in moving forward the ASAP project as a economically viable backup project. He notes that the decision on whether to advance the AKLNG project to the next phase of engineering design is not simply a state's decision. It is in the hands of the partners at AKLNG as well as the states. And that decision is currently scheduled for the second quarter of 2016, which will be when the three producer partners and TransCanada decide whether to move forward the FEED decision, the full FEED front-end engineering and design on the AKLNG project. He goes on to say that the ASAP project will provide a backup for any producer party as well as the state to ship gas in case AKLNG project does not advance. He notes as well that nothing in the proposed ASAP expanded pipeline diminishes or in any way impinges on the chances of AKLNG project succeeding. He notes that he has contacted the AKLNG producer partners at extremely high levels prior to his first announcing his plans for an expanded ASAP project, and he continues to have discussions with them. He said all have indicated an understanding of his proposal and their willingness to continue to make progress on AKLNG, and I would note that that is in fact the case. We are working hard. We have begun full-fledged negotiations on various commercial agreements on AKLNG.
In fact, I've just emerged from 3 days of those. He notes that having a viable backup plan is in keeping with how the producer partners do business. He specifically notes that ExxonMobil stated in a March 4th, 2015 analyst meeting, quote, simply put, our large resource base affords us the flexibility to select and develop the most attractive opportunities. We start with high-quality resources with stable, competitive fiscal terms from resource owners, and we choose to invest selectively in only the most attractive, end quote. So he really is noting that they, too, have alternative projects, and he believes it's in the state of Alaska's interest to do the same. He goes on to note in his letter his reasons for opposing HB 132, including putting on hold the ASAP expanded project as is proposed. In his opinion, under HB 132, we're betting the entire fiscal future of Alaska on all four of the companies, and in this case he's saying ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, British Petroleum, and TransCanada. All four companies agreeing that the AKLNG project is the most attractive of each company's multiple options, as indicated by ExxonMobil in the statement I read previously, that they make decisions on selection only on the most attractive projects. And he believes we can't take such an extreme risk when we as a state are facing a $4 billion deficit. So having an alternative project is, in his opinion, the right thing to do. He also notes that in 2006, the Stranded Gas Development Act, or also known as SGDA, failed because the state put all of its eggs in one basket and imposed timelines on itself, which leveraged the state's ability to negotiate terms that were acceptable to the state and protected us from the risks associated with any project. And he believes that if we tie our hands, which would be done through passage of HB 132, and thereby do not provide Alaska with a viable alternative, we run the risk of making the same mistake as we did in SGDA. He goes on to say that HB 132 substantially harms his ability, the team's ability to negotiate terms favorable to Alaska within the AKLNG framework, and this because we don't have a best alternative, an alternative structure to go to should the AKLNG framework and negotiations fail. He states that AKLNG is scheduled to make a decision regarding FEED in the second quarter of 2016, and that the HB 132 grants the an extension on that date to July 1, 2017, and that managing a project such as AKLNG through legislation isn't in the state's best interest. But he closes the letter by saying something very clearly again, that AKLNG is his and his administration's preferred option, but that simply we need to prepare to be prepared with a fallback if the parties associated with the AKLNG negotiations are not able to meet the hurdles and set out in the 2014 Heads of Agreement, which was the precedent for SB 238. And so he sees having a alternative fallback project as being in the state's interest, but that AKLNG is indeed the priority and our goal to make successful. So that, I believe, is the essence and basically a reiteration of what is in the body of his letter to you, Senator Giesel, and to the Senate.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Rutherford. You did a good job of reviewing each paragraph of the governor's letter. You used an acronym, SGDA. Could you, for the public, enumerate what that is?
Yes, Madam Chairman, if I might, it's Stranded Gas Development Act, SGDA.
All right, thanks very much. Questions for Deputy Commissioner Rutherford? Yes, Senator Wielichowski.
Thank you. So I'd like you to address some of the arguments that have been made by the sponsors of this bill. And I think there are three, and I can give them to you one at a time, or I can just give you all three. And there's probably more. I may miss some, but this is me restating it, not theirs. But the first argument seems to be that it this could create confusion in the markets. It sends a bad message to the markets and sends a bad message to our partners. The second argument is that it's going to cost the state to have a duplicative effort. And the third argument is, why should we do this now? Why not wait until this AKLNG project potentially doesn't succeed?
Madam Chairman, this is Marty Rutherford. If I may respond to Senator Wilikowski.
Yes, please, Deputy Commissioner.
Regarding creating confusion in the market, I think that the letter that the governor has provided to the Senate and to Senator Kathy Giesel clarifies that this is a backup project and that it would that the market would be any contact with the purchasing market, the Asian market, would clarify that the state of Alaska is very committed to a LNG project, that it is our full intention to advance one, that our primary interest and the focus is on the AKLNG project. But should that effort fail for some unforeseen reason, that in fact the state of Alaska will undertake an alternative project to bring Alaska gas to market. So I believe that this alternative effort does not create confusion in the market because it would be clear that this is a backup in case AKLNG does not move forward. Regarding it being a duplicate effort, I believe the AGDC board, in my discussions with the various members of AGDC, both staff and the board, have indicated that they are looking at ways to move forward a backup project during the next year while AKLNG is going through the commercial negotiations leading up to a FEED decision in the second quarter of 2016, that the AGDC board is interested in finding ways to move a backup project forward without spending a tremendous amount of money, and that looking at various aspects of it, they've just begun focusing on the one in terms of 36-inch pipe strength. I think they will be sorting out ways to move the alternative forward without spending a great deal of money. I've heard from all the parties at AGDC that's a overriding interest. Why now? Why not wait until some decision is made? I think that it was sort of restated within the body of the letter that waiting is no longer in the state's interest, that since we are facing such a significant deficit in our general fund budget, that we need to be moving forward every alternative possible to attain a gas pipeline project, which will be the underpinning for our economy in the next 4 decades. And that it's not in anyone's interest to just sit back and assume that AKLNG will in fact be successful, but to have something that is sitting there ready to move forward as an alternative should we not reach a successful outcome with our negotiations over the course of the next year leading up to the FEED decision on AKLNG. And I think that hopefully has answered the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. So let me go back and just review your responses to those questions. The first question had to do with confusion in the market. And so let's talk about that. So we have AKLNG. I'm going to refer to that as a large pipeline. We have ASAP, which is a smaller pipeline that the governor's letter refers to as backup, and yet some of the language you're using is calling it an alternative, which is actually somewhat different than a backup. Can you explain what you mean by alternative?
Senator Giesel, this is Marty Rutherford again. It is simply my being inaccurate. I should just continually call it a backup, a fallback project. It is. I don't mean to introduce confusion on that issue whatsoever. And I believe that the discussions that are occurring with the market during this pre-seed stages are at a very high level. Obviously, every potential gas seller is interested in advising the market that our gas is going to be available to them within the near term, that we're talking about the potential of that project, and in this instance, we'll be talking about AKLNG, and only if it does not, in fact, move forward to feed, would an alternative, smaller project, the Alaska Gas, be available through it. So it is, in fact, a backup.
Thank you. So if I were an Asian buyer, or an Indian buyer, or a Chinese buyer, and I was watching the news, which they are, and I knew that we had a project going forward with the three producers. It was a partnership, an equal partnership for Alaska, 25%, with companies that can easily fund their part of the bill. This is big companies. They've worked with these companies before. And I also know that the state of Alaska has this other project that is being called either backup or alternative, regardless. Wouldn't I be playing one against the other? I mean, here's the state of Alaska saying, well, we're not really sure which we're going to do. So the Chinese buyer says, well, AKLNG, I want the price that ASAP is going to give me, and the same thing to ASAP. Yet the SAP line doesn't really have a price yet. This seems like a difficult marketing position for the state of Alaska to be in. Comments?
Madam Chair, Marty Rutherford. I think that if at this stage of any project, what the discussions, as I understand them, and I'm certainly not an expert regarding LNG marketing, but in discussions with various experts, what I understand to be the case is that at this stage of a project, you're in very high-level discussions about not price, not specific delivery dates, but that there is an intention by parties to move gas to market. And so I think that there's little opportunity for anyone to leverage the state of Alaska on price, since we're not even close to that level of detail on any project to discuss price. So I do not think that we could be leveraged on that front, and I think we could clearly explain that really it's in their own best interest that AKLNG is the preferred option. Here is the specifics associated, well, the level of specifics we have available to date on the intentions of volume and timing, that is our preference of the state of Alaska. We are working hard to deliver that project, and we intend to deliver it. However, that should, for whatever reason, us not be able to move that project forward, we have every intention of moving forward a backup project that may be slightly less volume, and but that it is our intention to enter the market either with AKLNG or through some alternative project should AKLNG fail to move forward to FEED and on to FID.
Thank you. So staying with the subject of marketing, I understand that actually there are some pretty experienced folks in the Department of Natural Resources now in the North Slope Gas Commercialization Team who are marketing specialists. Is there something preventing the governor from marketing the state's gas now under AKLNG?
Madam Chairman, Marty Rutherford, no, there is not. And in fact, Audie Setters is the lead, is the state outside expert that we have hired. And in fact, he has been since 2014 in conversations with various parties at the Asian market. That the governor has also worked with the people within DNR who are handling the marketing effort, has sent a letter to the Asian market reiterating our commitment to bringing Alaska gas to market, and there are plans to escalate the outreach to the Asian market over the course of the next few months. So nothing is keeping that discussion from occurring. We are, in fact, engaged in it.
Wonderful. That's good to know. So, you know, the idea of having a backup plan is important, and that was a critical piece of Senate Bill 138, which we deliberated at length, more than 51 hearings, countless public testimony through the legislative process. We had our consultants here evaluating fiscals. We had financial advisors. So if AKLNG turns out to be not economic, how is it? Would it be possible that this smaller line would then become economic?
And Kevin, this is Marty Rutherford. I believe that the concern of the governor is that it wouldn't be a decision made on economics that might slow or stop AKLNG, but rather one where a party, one of the parties, a significant party, decided that they did not want to commit their funding to this alternative, but rather to one of their other LNG export facility options. And he does not want to see the state's gas moving to market based upon simply a company's alternative priorities. So I think his interest in moving an alternative, a backup project forward is simply so that if such a decision were to be made that would stall AKLNG, we have something that is ready to take the next step forward to move Alaska gas forward to market.
So if, speculating, of course, that one of the parties dropped out, and one of those parties could be the state of Alaska, quite frankly. Frankly, we're in the driver's seat here. Could not another party come in to join the AKLNG partnership?
I'm sure this is Marty Rutherford. Without getting into any detail, yes. I think it's fair to say that if one party dropped out, another party could be found on AKLNG to move it forward. And I do not hear the governor saying that that alternative would be unacceptable. It's just the idea if there was one or more party that decided not to pursue AKLNG and no other party was found to take their place or places, that we simply have to have something available to us that would pick up the pieces and move forward. But I certainly think that finding a replacement for one party's decision to drop out is under the auspices of AKLNG is absolutely an option and one that we would obviously want to pursue because we would like to have the strength of the large producers involved in an Alaska gas line project.
Well, thank you for that. That you're confirming something we heard from our consultants also, actually, as they reviewed large projects around the world. They pointed out that in many cases, new participants came in during the development of projects, even during construction time. So going now to the question of confusion, one of the things that I'm aware of is that ASAP, that's the smaller 100% state-owned pipeline, had applied for an EIS from the Corps of Engineers. And earlier this month, when the governor indicated that he was going to enlarge this small pipeline to actually be a conflicting project, the Corps of Engineers contacted the ASAP, I assume it was AGDC, and said, we're going to put your EIS on hold. This is the third permutation that you guys have done, and we're going to wait till you decide what you're going to do. isn't this an example of uncertainty? This is by federal regulators. Comments?
Madam Chair, Marty Rutherford, I am not within AGDC and I don't have the level of knowledge about exactly the communication between the federal regulators and AGDC on ASAP. I have heard secondhand that yes, they have asked, they have indicated that they will have stopped their EIS activity pending clarification on how the project wishes to proceed. I will say that in working over the years with various federal agencies, BLM, Corps of Engineers, EPA, it's not unusual for them to say there seems to be some lag in a project, confusion on what kind of development strategy is being embraced, for them to put a project on hold primarily simply because there are limited resources at the resource agencies to work on projects. So they try to prioritize those that are, moving forward without any clauses. But I also do understand that they are probably quite open to picking back up the effort when and if AGDC provides the clarity back to the agency that they've requested.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. And I want to fully acknowledge that you are focused on the AKLNG, and that was a question about the smaller pipeline, and I certainly understand that you're not qualified necessarily to speak about that. Senator Machicki had a question.
Hello, Ms. Rutherford. I wanted to actually go back to the last subject. When you talked about the danger of one of the companies or the state of Alaska dropping out, and you think about the economy of scale at a 25% ownership of the model we're looking at through AKLNG, I'm curious, in your opinion, under what conditions with a less favorable scale would a smaller ID diameter line at a significantly higher risk to Alaskans be more likely to succeed if the economics of the larger scale were not to prove up, so to speak?
Senator, Madam Chairman, if I might, Senator Machicki, again, if in fact the project economics was the reason that a party decided to leave the AKLNG, I'm not sure that the state would say that an alternative project is in the state's best interest. I think, again, that the primary focus the governor brings to this discussion has to do with a choice where a party has alternative projects to take gas to market, and they decide that the economics in one location is better than an AKLNG project. So I think that that is the premise that underpins the governor's intentions to have a backup project. I cannot speak to whether or not a smaller diameter project might be more or less economic. It is a truism generally that more throughput means lower tariff, but beyond that, I get a little unsure as to whether or not there could be an argument made that a smaller project could be made more economic because of the modules and demand, various costs associated with the liquefaction and GTP side of a project.
Senator Machicki, follow-up?
It's just an interesting concept. It's highly unlikely. I mean, there's a reason that these projects are at an increasingly larger scale. I see very few deciding that they're going to modularize to become more efficient. So I just, the very conditions that would cause the state to not move forward with AKLNG are likely to be economic conditions that make it unlikely for another option to be economic. Unless we went to a very small diameter in-state option, just with an interest in getting gas to Alaska. And so I just find it interesting that the backup plan that we now have on the shelf through ASAP is not at sort of a acceptable stage of development where we could pick it back up if there were some other conditions that made it favorable in the future, no matter how unlikely they may be.
Senator Wadakowski, you had a question.
I did. Thank you. Do our partners in the AK LNG project have other LNG projects around the world that they're currently evaluating that are in competition with our project?
Madam Chairman, Marty Rutherford, in response to Senator Wilikowski, I think there's a mix of answers. I don't know about British Petroleum. The answer regarding ExxonMobil is yes, they do have alternative projects, one being in British Columbia that's approximately at the same stage as AK LNG. And I do not believe ConocoPhillips has any alternative competing projects, but ExxonMobil definitely has several, one as close as British Columbia.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Wadakowski? Yeah.
And is your concern, or the governor's concern, the thought that they're obviously going to do some extensive economic analysis, internal rates of return, net present values, and if they could find out, and if they find out, well, they can make maybe 10% rate of return on the Alaska project, but a 12% rate of return on the Canadian project, they'll probably go with the Canadian project, even though the 10% rate of return would make Alaska a heck of a lot of money. Is that generally explaining the governor's concerns?
Madam Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, yes, that does capture it. These projects are net present value based, and participants will look at their economics, and since they require a great deal of financial commitment, and you only can move one forward, then you probably will move the one forward that provides the best returns. You have captured exactly what the governor's concern is. It's not that the project is uneconomic, but that simply a major player or players decide not to pursue AK LNG because there is a better project in their portfolio that draws them away because of limited capital.
Thank you. Senator Costello had a question for you, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Ms. Rutherford. So the AK LNG project has been repeatedly described to us as a project that is essentially five mega projects in one. And so my question to you is, at a time where, you know, just this morning in the same room several hours ago, we cut live homework help for students and principal mentoring, the governor introduced a budget without the increases to education last year. At a time when we're looking at these kinds of cuts, how can the governor justify adding another mega project? How many mega projects can the state afford? All for the simple reason that we are unable to wait until the second quarter of 2016 when we will know for certain whether AK LNG goes forward. And at the same time, why would we pay twice for the same information? Because the way the legislature had drafted the bill, which is now law, was that there's a sharing of information so that we wouldn't have to pay for two projects at the same time.
Madam Chairman, Senator, I think I must not have been clear. I think it's that the AGDC is very concerned about not expending duplicate monies or to waste any of the state's resources, particularly at this time. And they are talking about ways to move an alternative or backup project forward without spending any duplicate monies, but simply to have an alternative ready should it become necessary. So I think your point is well taken. I think the board and the staff are focused on those concerns as well.
Paula,
follow up.
So we have no gas treatment plant, no LNG plant, and no gas for the ASAP line, and yet what I read in the letter is it's described as the intent to bring ASAP to a viable project. How do you bring a viable project forward without spending a tremendous amount of money, to use your words.
Madam Chairman, Senator, I think that the specifics on how I'm not, as the Senator Giesel noted, I am not within the inside of AGDC. I am focused on AKLNG. And I cannot speak to how, what specific elements they are considering moving forward or how they intend to move an alternative backup concept forward regarding the liquefaction or the expansion of the project. But I believe there are probably ways to do that. But I would suggest that they are in the midst of those conversations within AGDC, and I am not party to them. So I apologize for my ignorance on that front.
Just one final question.
Follow up, Senator Costello.
I had an opportunity to meet with the governor, and he is interested in marketing gas, you know, on Alaska's behalf. And it sounds as if he has that ability to do that now. We have, if I understand it, you mentioned we have a gas, some marketing gas within the department. Can the governor play that role? And he has a tremendous amount of experience in that role. Wouldn't that seem the best way to move forward is to have this AKLNG stick with the plan? We find out early next year if it's not going to work, and in the meantime, he's marketing Alaska's gas, and then ASAP comes online if needed. I don't see how that plan isn't anything but in the best interest of Alaskans, especially considering the situation where we're cutting live homework help. I'm having trouble understanding.
Deputy Commissioner, did you want to respond?
I'm sorry, I think I was speaking over you. I'm sorry, Senator.
I just wondered, Deputy Commissioner, if you wanted to respond.
Yes, ma'am. Senator Giesel, Madam Chairman Marty Rutherford again. Yes, the governor can move forward on marketing Alaska's gas, but I think the message he wants to send to the market and mean it and have something substantive to support it is that should AKLNG, which is again the state's primary focus, or is our intention to deliver AKLNG, if at all possible, successfully to a 2016 FEED decision, but should that not work for whatever reasons that the state of Alaska has put money into moving an alternative project forward, so that we are not just starting over from a static position, but instead are moving forward from a position that has momentum, that it is continuing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Costello. Before I call on Senator Coghill, you, Senator Costello, asked some questions about the AGDC board that Deputy Commissioner could not answer. And I followed a bit of what the AGDC board is doing. In fact, they're meeting next Tuesday. There remains about $200 million in the ASAP, that's the Smaller Pipeline Fund. And that money was set aside to actually move that project forward should the larger gas pipeline fail. What the resolution was that they passed was to now cost out, in other words, start spending that $200 million right now to determine the costs to expand the smaller gas pipeline. So, in fact, I would share your concern that $200 million would probably buy the homework help program that was just deleted and some other things. I'm not sure. I do agree with you that it's probably not a good expenditure of the money. But Senator Coghill had a question.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Marty, for being willing to come into the committee. Since you are on the AKLNG top task, I guess, maybe you could help me understand a couple of things that the governor said. I would like to know what is the substantial harm or barrier with negotiating favorable terms if this bill passes, because it seemed to me that we're given some conditions, for example, one of the members pull out, or we go to a favorable feed or the 2017. So, but at this point, you're in a negotiation of going forward to that feed. So what are the favorable term issues that will be substantially harmed?
Chairman Diesel, may I ask Senator Cargill a clarification?
Absolutely.
So the question is what elements might be harmed by the passage of 132?
Yeah, and well, what I'll do is I'll just read what the governor said, why he's against this bill. Will substantially harm my ability to negotiate terms favorable to Alaska under the AKLNG framework. You're in the AKLNG framework. I just want to know what that barrier is and what the harm is.
Chairman Diesel, Senator Cargill, I think that is in reference to a basic standard of negotiation, a premise that you go into commercial negotiations with. If, in fact, you have no good alternative, your ability to negotiate terms is extremely limited, and there's a term that's used in commercial negotiations called BATNA, and it's the best available alternative to the issue you're negotiating with. And so it's basically the assumption is if you have nowhere else to go, if in fact you have only one alternative available to you, then you do not have much leverage in protecting your goals or interests. So I think that's the essence of that bullet, is that he feels that the state of Alaska needs an alternative available to it to protect us during the negotiations on specific agreements under AKLNG.
Okay, Madam Chair, and that just sounds like a competing alternative rather than a backup alternative. And so, I understand what you're saying. So, since you've been working on the AKLNG framework, he also says that we would take an extreme risk if we put this bill in attracting the customers. Well, in the first bullet point, he says Alaska is betting on all four companies. And so have you found them to negotiate in failed attempts? Have we caught them in places where they are trying to co-opt Alaska, be disingenuous, not act in good faith? Is there anything that shows us that this is a bad partnership?
Madam Chairman, Senator Cromkill, no. The parties under AKLNG are negotiating in very good faith. Everyone is working very hard to find solutions to problems that each and every party has and challenges that come to the negotiating tables on commercial agreements. So I think things are progressing extremely well. I'm not sure it's any kind of a reference or a reference to a party's bad faith, but any commercial agreement has inherent in it the risk of failure, that you may not find that appropriate middle ground where each and every party can live. So I think that's the essence of the concern, is that there may be something that has not yet arisen. There's nothing that would indicate to me that we have any significant barriers ahead of us at this time, but I think the intention is simply to have an alternative that is valid, and it is a backup to AKLNG. AKLNG is ahead. AKLNG has huge advantages to it. So, but should it fail for whatever reasons, not bad faith, but simply an inability to find that sweet spot that every agreement must find, that is the concern, is that we have something to turn to.
Okay.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, because this bill that we have before us, 132, is just saying if they withdraw or if they agree or there's at least holding down to at least 50% of the gas intended for export, you can't move forward until you got a front-end design. So he says that we can't take an extreme risk counting on that, but we still have the backup plan. In I don't think we took the AGDC off the table yet, so we're just saying, it looks to me like, just saying, let's go make that decision if we can even move forward with it, and then we have this other plan. But you're saying negotiating with all four companies has an extreme risk on the AKLNG. I'm just wondering what that extreme risk is.
Madam Chairman, Senator Crosfield, no, I'm not saying there's extreme risk. There's always extreme, there is extreme risk, obviously. You are right, I did say that. So there is always risk that you, commercial agreements don't come together. And in this case where there's so many, there is risk. I personally absolutely believe that we're going to get to a point where we can make a feed decision. I think there's motivation, but here's the issue that I don't think I've emphasized, and you basically referred to it a minute ago. The alternative project that is in place right now at AGDC that is limited to 500 million throughput is not an economic alternative. It is not a good economic alternative. It is a project that because of its low throughput would require a tremendous amount of subsidies. So what the governor is suggesting is simply to expand that to make it much more of an economically viable project as a backup if, in fact, AKLNG is not successful.
Follow-up, Senator Cogswell?
Not at this point. Thank you.
All right. Senator Michiki, question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. Ms. Rutherford, the letter, it repeats a statement by the AGDC president that says it's after the press release, after the February 2014 presentation by REI, Resources Energy Inc., and his statement was REI would be an excellent anchor tenant for the ASAP project, and the presentation reaffirms our belief that we have a commercially viable project capable of delivering gas to Alaskans by 2020. So my question is going to be about risk. We're partnered. We're not dependent on, but we're partnered with three companies that have successfully, actively traded trillions and trillions of cubic feet of LNG in Asian markets for the last 45 years. I'm not going to say something that sounds like I'm not respectful of REI, but wouldn't you say that we have somewhat lower risk with companies with those decades of experience versus a company hopeful to be engaged in the LNG business in the future?
Chairman Giesel, Senator Murkowski, Michiki. Sorry, I just elevated you, Senator. Marty Rutherford again. Of course, there is less risk if, in fact, our partners are ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and British Petroleum. Yes, they are the world-class producers and marketers of LNG, and they're a wonderful team to be in partnership on AKLNG. And, of course, that is the essence of why it's the governor's preferred alternative. And he's clear within this letter that is his focus. It is exactly what he has told me. This is the one we want. This is, you make this successful. Make this work if at all possible. And he said the same to Commissioner Myers. So, yes, it's our preferred alternative. Yes, there's less risk with them. But should something occur that causes AKLNG not to move forward, he does not want the state of Alaska to be flat-footed and have no alternative backup plan that is ready, that is moving forward and able to deliver some economic future for the state of Alaska.
follow up, Madam Chair. That's a fair statement. I'm kind of a guy that really doesn't like risk. And when I think about where we are in this process with the partners that we've chosen, I feel fairly comfortable with that. I actually wonder why we're having this rub. I don't understand why we're not sitting down at the table and saying, okay, we agree. We're all behind AKLNG 100%. And if for some reason something doesn't work out, we agree we're going to work together on other options, first understanding why AKLNG didn't work out. I really think a bomb got dropped and we didn't get together and work it out. And now we find some folks at odds with other folks. And someone recently said to me, I haven't seen a situation where increasing polarization has resulted in a better outcome. So I hope we can all come to the same table and work this out. Our experience as the sovereign, when I think about our experience with the folks that we are partnered with in severance, royalty, property taxes through the years, I mean, it's been a pretty successful relationship. Those companies have all had operating relationships that have been very complicated but have worked out. I mean, you think about the Caparico operating agreement, the Prudhoe Bay operating agreement on a smaller scale, the Beluga River unit operating agreement. These are folks that all could look at other choices in other places and chose to work together for a great outcome for our state. This is the first time we'll be a partner in this project, and I feel very strongly about it. And I have to say, this project has a plan for a terminus in Nikiski, Alaska, which happens to be in my district, and I'm pretty focused on that. Other projects don't make the same claim, so I hope we can come to the same table and come to the table and work this out. I think we're very close to saying the same thing, and certainly hope we can get there.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Further questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. So I would love it for all of us to get together and work it out. I don't, for whatever reason, see that happening. And I know people want to think the best, and we've had a partnership with the industry for decades, and it's been mutually beneficial for both of us. But just in the time that I've been here, I've been through AGPA, ANGDA, Stranded Gas Act, AGEA, Denali, and I don't want to say it's Lucy in the football, but it sure feels that way. And we waited for 30 years. Alaskans waited for 30 years for the largest undeveloped oil and gas reserve in North America to be developed, Point Thompson. And the only way we got it developed was when we yanked their leases. We went through 23 plans of development. We've had tariff disputes costing the state billions, in which a judge said the state was guilty of inexcusable trustfulness in our dealings with the oil industry. So that's, if there's a little bit, just a tiny bit of concern about where this is headed, it's from the history. It's from people getting bribed right down the street with $100 bills in a hotel room and for cheeseburgers, and 10% of our legislature getting indicted.
Madam Chair, I wasn't around then, and so I object. Thank you.
I'll stick to the bill, please.
Well, I'm just saying where some of the concern arises, Madam Chair. Can I continue?
As long as it sticks to the bill, thanks.
It sticks
and
to
the gas.
It sticks to the bill.
Okay.
It sticks to the bill. And so that's where the concern arises. That's where the concern arises. And so I have I do have a question for you, though, Ms. Rutherford, and it's on Section 3. And I don't think this is something that people have talked about very much, but what that section says is the corporation may not market gas owned or controlled by an entity other than itself without express written consent from that entity. And that appears, from my reading, to give the producers veto power. And there doesn't appear to be any expiration date on that. And so do you have any concerns about that section?
Madam Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I actually am not very familiar with that section, but when you're reading it, it does sound like it limits the ability to discuss with the market gas from a smaller project such as ASAP. And ASAP itself is a project, even, I mean, at 500 million throughput, a half a B, must sell gas outside of the state of Alaska. We could not use that volume of gas, just even that small volume of gas within the state of Alaska. The market demand is inadequate to support just that. So we would have to market gas for even the ASAP as it stands. So yes, I guess I would say I have some concern with that Section 3 as you read it to me. The other thing I just want to reiterate is the governor is not suggesting anything more than that we move forward as I understand it, I'm not being here during the period of time that ASAP was formed, nor AGDC, that it was put together as an alternative, a fallback project to a larger gas pipeline project. And I think that the economics that have been made public associated with that small volume project, that in itself would have to have an export arm because we cannot use that volume of gas inside the state. I think our governor is saying that let's upsize that backstop project to a point where it can be more economic. We would not have to subsidize it to the same extent as a ASAP project that's limited to 500 million throughput. So I think that the point is he is focused and committed to and supportive of the AK LNG project, but he wants to see as a backup alternative a more economically viable ASAP project, which has larger volumes, but the export element of the ASAP would help to subsidize the state's in-state gas use, and we would have some of a larger market. And again, it would be a backup project, and it would not be taken off the shelf static, but would have made some further development and it's associated with larger throughput.
Follow-up? Thank you, Ms. Rutherford. So, Deputy Commissioner, just on that Section 3, so this is in the AGDC statutes, and it came out of Senate Bill 138. Isn't Audie Setters, marketing specialist, housed in your department, Department of Natural Resources? Who actually will be marketing the gas on Alaska's behalf through AK LNG?
Madam Chairman, Senator Giesel, it would be DNR. It is, of course, the state's gas, so there may be other parties involved, not just Audie Setters, nor the Department of Natural Resources. So, but yes, Audie Setters is housed in DNR.
Thank you. And further, in terms of marketing the state's gas, that's air quotes around that, what you're referring to is our royalty gas, which still requires a decision by the Commissioner of Natural Resources to take that gas in kind. In other words, molecules versus money. Also true?
Madam Chairman, that is absolutely accurate. And in AK LNG, it would trigger the ability of the producers to elect to pay their production taxes as gas so that the state's share of gas throughput would increase from, let's say, an average of 12.5% to somewhere close to 25%.
Thank you for clarifying that. And that's what makes us an equal 25% partner in this endeavor of AK LNG. Further questions from committee members? All right, seeing none, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. If you would stay online in case there's any further questions. I will invite the, we did close public testimony. I'll just remind folks of that. We closed it at our last hearing. And since then, as I said earlier, we did get another letter in support of Senate Bill 132, which is on basis, so it is publicly available. So at this time, I would invite the bill sponsor and staff to come forward for any closing remarks or comments.
Madam Chairman, for the record, Representative Chenault, District 29. Madam Chairman, if it's okay with you, I would like to bring up the other sponsor of the bill who has worked probably harder on this than I have, and I'm sure he may have some final comments. I will just generically say that I appreciate getting a copy of the letter that you received. This is something that we have been asking the governor for a long time, since he originally promoted and came out with his plan to move forward the expansion of the ASAP line. And I'm glad to see finally we have something on paper that at least we can talk about. It brings up probably as many, it probably answers as many questions as it brings up more questions. You know, just for the record, Madam Chairman, earlier you were talking about, there was made mention of BP, Conoco, and Exxon having projects all over the world and up and down the West Coast. Madam Chairman, I believe for the record that BP and Conoco have no proposed LNG projects in British Columbia or anywhere else in North America. So when we keep hearing that thrown out there, it's like we should be afraid that there's other projects going on, but our partners are not involved in that. Those two partners are not. And I believe that Exxon actually in the is part of a project in BC, but that project itself is nowhere near as far along as the AK LNG project is. So I think that, you know, we throw things out that, I don't know why we do. I think it's to make it look like there's a lot more competition maybe out there, that our partners are doing things. Madam Chairman, I think it's true that there are partnerships all over the world, and they're trying to do the best for their shareholders, and I think that that's what we should be doing, the best for our shareholders. Maybe I'll stop there and maybe finish after we get done. I think Rena with Representative Hawker's office has some things, and I know also Representative Hawker would like to talk about numerous things, and we're here to answer your questions.
Thank you, Representative Chenault. Representative Hawker, would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just, frankly, be extremely brief here. I think I just heard a lot of things said in testimony here that I think if we all believed everything that we have all said to each other, and we were all committed to what we believe we are saying, we all agree that AK LNG should be the project, the horse we ride, the decision the legislature made over the last several years, because it is on track to success, and that we should in fact have a backup backup project, something that we can fall back on if AK LNG falters. What I am concerned about, and which is why House Bill 132 was introduced, is that we keep hearing the characterization of the backup project as an alternative project, and it must be a place for the an unsatisfied party to run to turn to as an alternative. And we kept hearing that word, alternative, 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 a place to run to. And with all respect to my good friend, Ms. Rutherford, she said she shouldn't be using that word, but she kept coming back to it constantly, because that's what it is. It's an alternative. And an alternative is a competing project that is casting doubt and questions on the market. Again, where I really believe all of us have the same objective, House Bill 132 is a temporary
statement by all of Alaska that says, give success a chance. Let us continue the successful course that we are on with very reasonable short-term, it's a short-term timeline. If nothing happens the way we want, if something does not happen the way we want it to, and a partner does choose to leave, all bets are off. We go devote all of our resources to the backup, fallback approach. Hospital 132 says, if we reach FEED and that big decision is made and we are investing, you know, cumulatively probably $2 billion to move a project forward, fine, if somebody wants to look at an alternative at that time, great. It's just probably not even an appropriate thing to look at. And lastly, we do have the date of July 1, 2017. I noticed the letter from our chief executive says that the HB 132 is creating a one-year extension. That's, Madam Chair, that's just not accurate at all. All of the dates and deadlines on the project plan are defined in the HOA, the MOU, and the enabling legislation we passed last year. 132 does not change any of those dates. And Madam Chair, I really appreciate the chance for just a couple words there, but 132 is simply about doing what is best for Alaskans to make sure that Alaskans really do preserve the best opportunity for a productive route forward. And thank, really appreciate the opportunity to speak, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Ms. Delbridge, comments?
Rena Delbridge, staff to Representative Hawker. Madam Chair, I'm here if you have any questions. I have the details of the correction that Representative Hawker just poked out related to the way this bill does not extend any time frame. If you like that, and maybe an opportunity briefly to clear up the record related to Section 3 of the bill and its restriction on AGDC from marketing gas it does not own or have title to. I believe that Deputy Commissioner Rutherford suggested that would be a problem for the ASAP project. Like the AK LNG project, AGDC can still market gas that is held by someone else with written consent to do so. They can't market gas that they don't own or control. Like this project, if the state has gas in ASAP, it too would be in DNR's title. It would be royalty gas. So the same principles essentially apply, and they are still welcome and able to ask AGDC and give them consent to market that gas.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor or staff? All right. Yes, closing remarks, Representative Chenault. Thank
please,
you.
Please, Madam Chairman, and for the record, Representative Chenault. We talk about creating uncertainty and how that is something that kills projects. And in the governor's letter, he talks about somebody leaving the project. And, you know, what do we do there? Well, Madam Chairman, on one of the bullet points, and I'll just speak to it, it says ASAP also provides a backup for any producer party as well as the state to ship gas if AKLNG does not advance. Well, Madam Chairman, I'm here to tell you that if that goes forward, what you do is you give the partners in AKLNG, if Exxon, for instance, doesn't like the deal that's put together, they go around and they negotiate with the state on ASAP, same way with Conoco, same way with BP. So by upsizing the project, you're creating the uncertainty of our partners in AKLNG not liking something, and so they come to and try to negotiate with ASAP. So, you know, I think there's some of the things that we've got to worry about, and I'd be in trouble if I didn't at least say this. Madam Chairman, Representative Hawker, myself, Ms. Delbridge, my staff, Tom Wright, have worked on gas projects for years now. But we wouldn't be anywhere, we wouldn't be where we are today if we didn't have some help. And we've got help from past administrations, from House members, from Senate members, but you have one Senate member, Senator McGuire, that has been instrumental since we started with House Bill 369, House Bill 9, House Bill 4, SB 138. She's been one of the people that is really knowledgeable and has really helped. So I just want to make sure that this is not all about credit, but people should get credit for good work. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members for the bill sponsor or staff? All right. Thank you. Seeing no questions, we do have a new fiscal note. It is still a zero fiscal note. The narrative on this page 2 simply updates some of the language to correspond with what is actually in Senate Bill 132. So it's more grammatical changes. It's still a zero fiscal note. Yes, Senator Costello.
Would it be possible to have Miles Baker explain specifically what those changes are?
Absolutely. Mr. Miles Baker is online. He's from AGDC. Mr. Baker, can you hear us?
Madam Chairman.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, through the chair to Senator Costello, the principal change is on page 2 of the fiscal note, third paragraph, where it describes in section 2 of the bill, which sets the three conditions, the three earliest date conditions. And one of the amendments that was made in the House from the original bill that was introduced just clarified that first condition, that the party that withdraws, it clarified that it needs to be a venture party that holds natural gas leases. And so that was really the only change, I believe, that was made in the fiscal note, just to correspond to the CS that happened in the House.
Further clarification needed, Senator Costello? All right, great. Thank you, Mr. Baker. All right, any other questions about the fiscal note? All right, seeing none, it is still a zero fiscal note. So any further discussion on the bill? Senator Wadakowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this, had asked about the last meeting if we could hear from our partners, and I'd like to renew that request.
Well, Senator Wadakowski, this is actually a bill about 138, not about their participation in the project, so I have not invited them to come and speak on the subject.
It's, if we're in debate now, I...
Please.
It's a fairly major policy change, and in every single major one of these gas line issues, we hear from the partners, mm-hmm. and I think... I can't move this bill today without hearing from the partners. Does this have another referral where the next committee...
It does not have another referral. And actually, it's not a policy change. It's actually substantiating Senate Bill 138, which we did already pass with multiple hearings.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I one of the things that we've heard significant testimony about is that this is going to impact our partners. And we've heard that as one of the major bases for doing this, and that it sends uncertainty to our partners. I've heard that multiple times. I would like to hear from the partners. I would like to have them sitting in front of us and ask them, is this going to drastically impact, is this going to change in any way your position? And I think as a committee, we have an obligation to hear that. That's simply doing our due diligence. This is, I disagree with you that this is not a major policy change. This is a major policy change in the direction of where we're going with the gas line. I think it's critical that we hear from our partners.
I appreciate that, Senator Wadakowski, and I guess I would have to beg to differ that it is not a policy change. It's actually substantiating the findings, the directions that we set in Senate Bill 138. That's the purpose of it. There is no purpose to change any policy. So, further discussion?
I have just a comment.
Yes, Senator Michiki.
I hate to disagree with anyone, but... I see this as policy preservation. We have existing policy. Hard fought last year. Final vote was 52-8. 52-8 is fairly secure policy. And we've had a change of an administration. What I hope, this looks like it's moving out today, most likely. what I hope happens this weekend is that some folks get together and come to some agreement. I don't think this is anything that anyone likes to do. I think we'd like to, I know I support the new administration. I want to see great things happen the next 4 years, and certainly hope folks will get together this weekend before this goes any further and agree that we're on a course with AKLNG. We're all on board with some other type of project if AKLNG fails, and hope that agreement can occur. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, you know, I was probably one of the more critical ones of the note here, so, but I wanted to read something out of the first paragraph. He says, I want to make it clear that I and my administration absolutely want the AKLNG project to succeed. All I can say is, thank you, Governor. And he just gave reasons why he might disagree with this approach, but because at least to me it seemed confusing that he wanted to build a project that would be at least ready to compete before we got to that decision point on front-end engineering and design. And so I'm going to support moving forward with this bill so that we can get to the question, is this AKLNG project worth going forward on? And so I think the governor wants the same thing. We're probably pushing him a little bit here to stay with an agreement that happened before he got there. And so we're probably rooted a little more deeply in it. But I want the governor to know that we agree on that project, on that AKLNG project. And until we know that that's not a viable project, I don't know how we can get a competing project going alongside of it. Having a backup plan, I totally agree with him as well. So that's why I wanted to know, why does this give them the problem of negotiating better terms? I don't think it does. I think that there's a fear there that it does, but I don't think it does. And so I'm going to support this House Bill 132 to keep us on the path to get to that decision point that says that can go or it can't. And so with that, I don't know who's going to make the motion, but I'm going to support it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Costello.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 132, Work Order 29-LS0623/GALF from committee with individual recommendations and new attached zero fiscal note dated March 6, 2015.
Thank you. Is there objection?
Yes.
Thank you. Discussion?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we've discussed, but I'll just for the record at this point put it on again. And this bill is moving extremely fast. I think this is highly unusual, the speed at which this is moving. And it's also highly unusual. It's only got one referral. I think it's important that we hear from the partners. And that's one of the major arguments for why we need to pass this legislation, is that it's creating uncertainty with our partners. And I haven't heard that from the partners. That's it would seem common sense to me. It would seem highly unusual if we didn't do it, quite frankly, that we didn't bring our partners in. Now, is this a major policy change? Yes. The governor has come forward, and he has an idea of what he wants to do with the ASAP line, and he wants to change it pretty significantly. He wants to increase the amount of gas that you can put through it and potentially, as a backup, have an option available that would essentially allow us to go forward if this line falls through. And so this really is a large diameter pipeline, and this is a major project. This is, in my opinion, a huge policy change. I don't see the urgency of moving this today. It's also highly unusual that this bill has one committee referral, and we've had two hearings on it. I don't know why we can't just wait until Monday, or shoot, I'll come back tomorrow if you want, and hear from our partners. I think it's critical that we hear from them. I don't know why we're rushing this through at this point. We've got plenty of time in this session, and I just don't understand why we need to move it out today, Madam Chair. I think we have questions that need to get answered from our partners.
Thank you, Senator Welikowski. So my response is, the policy change that you're referring to is actually what you also identified in what you just said, and that is changing the ASAP line to a larger diameter, expending money. That's something that the AGDC board is going to make a decision on next Tuesday. This is money that would be set aside and spent when we're actually going forward with the project. That's a concern, and that's a policy change. What this bill does, House Bill 132, is it actually creates certainty for us, the state of Alaska. The producers are experienced in this type of project. In fact, the people that they have on the team have brought more than 50% of the world's LNG projects online. They know what they're doing. We need to create certainty for ourselves. And so that is the purpose of House Bill 132 that we're addressing today. Further discussion of the objection? Seeing none. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please? Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please, for the vote?
Senator Stoltz? Senator Wilkowski?
No.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Senator Stedman? Senator Costello?
Yes.
Chair Giesel?
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
Thank you. So with a vote of four yeas and one nay, Senate Bill 132 passes out of this committee with newly attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations. We are slightly after 5 o'clock, so at this time I will adjourn the committee. Committee members, don't leave until you sign the transmittal document, please. Senate Bill 57 will be set aside for a future meeting, and that next meeting will be on Monday. On Monday, we will be hearing the confirmation hearing for Mr. Joe Paskvan, who has been appointed to the Board of Directors for the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation. We will also be taking up possibly Senate Bill 70, as well as a couple of other bills, one of them being Senate Bill 50, entitled ADA, Bonds, Loans, and LNG Project. So at this time, the committee is adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:03 p.m.